So who had a Mr. Spell growing up? I didn't.
I did.
I did not.
Actually, Tom and Jerry.
More enhancements there. But this always makes me laugh, him throwing the beer can at Tom and Jerry.
Okay,
here's the line. I just know they're going to probe my anus.
Know they're going to probe my anus. Thank you, Mystery Science Theater, for making me never be able to watch this scene the same again.
Mm-hmm.
They did this Island Earth, which was the movie that was playing. It's the movie from Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been able to look at that part of E.T. again.
Absolutely.
The same way.
Yeah.
Because the thing they say is...
Okay. I got such a kick out of recognizing...
probe my anus.
I got such a kick out of recognizing the fact that the E.T. is watching this Island Earth after seeing Mystery Science Theater 3000, mm-hmm. the movie, and then watching E.T.
Don't
get
me wrong.
Again, after
I love Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I love the show when it was on, but they just ruined this entire movie for me. Not really.
Kind of like the teacher in Spider-Man for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's... We go into more than enough detail on that in that commentary. Don't his fingers look like sausage links?
I wasn't gonna make that little observation.
Betty, he is hungover.
But this I love how crappy a calling plan this is on the long distance commercial.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a horrible calling plan for compared to what we have today. Which there's still pretty crappy plans today, but this is especially. Yeah, exactly. If I call on Saturday for 5 minutes, it's only $6.99 a minute.
$6.99 a minute.
Oh, God. I don't know. This is a really great way of establishing, for the kids anyway, you know, it's using more images than it is dialogue.
He looks hammered.
Mm-hmm.
He just looks hammered.
But it's just really brilliant how they're using images,
mm-hmm.
instead of heavy dialogue to explain to the mm-hmm. little kids anyway. Exactly what E.T. is going to intend to do in the next act.
Yes, a lesser filmmaker would explain all of this
mm-hmm.
to where we could understand it.
Mm-hmm. But you're seeing the wheels turn behind E.T. You're seeing the wheels turn
yeah.
when you look at E.T.
By this time, you should be so engrossed in the story that you kind of get what the intentions are, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never
had this happen in school.
It was pretty funny that you have one kid dumping all the frogs out, and then all the other kids just start to follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
kind of a cliche moment.
Mentality.
Yeah.
Now, I want to know what this movie that's playing.
I was going to ask you what
movie this is. I mean, I wish I did know.
I was expecting you to know.
Unfortunately, I know. I didn't check it.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what?
Well, see, the evil girl's getting her just desserts right here, Brian.
Yeah, I know. You know what? I'm connected to the net. I'm going to go ahead and find out.
Well, it's not a... I like the integrating of what's happening in school.
I love the cross-cutting between the two.
Yeah.
I mean, grab the girl.
And then the integrating of the music from the movie E.T.'s watching with John Williams' score is the best part of this moment here.
Mm-hmm.
Because he makes it sound like the music from the movie, but also it's his own original score, which I really did love that touch.
Again, the
and apparently E.T. and apparently Elliot's a really good kisser, but
yeah.
These are all the parts he's going to use to make his radar, his communicator.
I want to know how exactly he knows what household appinances to use.
Well,
he is
a genius. Yeah.
I think his intentions are to take all these things apart and see what he can use.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he knows exactly what's
in
all these appliances, but I think he's smart enough.
This is one of my favorite parts when he just gets hammered with the.
What I like about this is that it
damn.
Yeah.
I think you killed him already.
Drew Barrymore's line right there. I think you killed him already.
Beautiful. Adorable.
Well, apparently adults grown-ups can't see E.T. because she does really miss him here.
I think that's completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you just wonder how it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But
again, the most clueless mom I've ever... Probably not the most clueless, but, you know, she's up there. Yeah, this is a really fun scene to watch.
Oh, it's John Ford's The Quiet Man.
Okay.
From 1952 with John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara.
Huh.
Just found that on.
What website did you get that off of?
That'd be the Internet Movie Database.
You pretty much find out anything you want there, can't you?
Oh, yeah. They've got...
What movie is E.T. watching when he gets drunk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, for some reason, I just really...
Too sure you got my Elliot?
This great moment is continuous.
Oh, man. I mean... You know, apparently there was a great director by the name of Howard Hawks who said, great movie is three great scenes, no bad ones. This has a string of great scenes that you just cannot believe. I mean, you know.
Wow, the Atari joystick. Wow.
I know.
Man, that's
I like that. Mommy, he can talk. Of course he can talk.
This is Sesame Street pre-Elmo, which was when it was a lot less annoying.
It was decent.
Yeah. When it was still a good little kid show. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was a scene cut from the movie at this around this moment where Elliot visits the principal's office, who was played by Harrison Ford.
Really?
Did you not know that? Harrison Ford was supposed to originally have a cameo in this movie.
That is absolutely right.
As Elliot's principal, but apparently it was going to be way too distracting to see Indiana Jones as Elliot's... Indiana Jones and Han Solo as Elliot's...
I love
E.T.'s eyes right here. Look at his eyes. This is a great...
This is
dreadful. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Look at his eyes.
Oh, God!
Elliot.
I like how he says that. What? Then it hits him. What the
heck? My little sister taught him how to talk. Holy crap, why couldn't I do that?
Yes, and going back to Harrison Ford's scene a bit, Melissa Matheson was married to Harrison Ford for many years.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm guessing this is where they met.
Actually, I think it was before that.
Was it? Well, the fact of the matter is there was an entire scene cut with Harrison Ford playing Elliot's principal, and I believe Melissa Matheson playing a school nurse, if I'm not mistaken, making a cameo.
No, I don't
know. Phone? He said phone? He said phone? Look, that there's so much being done with E.T.'s face here, thanks to the enhancements here. He's able to articulate the words so much better, and I mean, it's all very subtle, but it's really brilliantly done. Another iconic moment, and the mother of all T-shirt lines right here.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, no, there are other ones.
Well, it was the one that we. I think it was. This is probably one of the first. Great T-shirt lines, anyway.
No nukes. I'm surprised they didn't change that.
Well, I don't think you can see the T-shirt.
You can't really see it, but it's like, you know. Well, we'll talk about the PC level of this version later.
Which is kind of painful. But
just kind of painful, disturbing. Well, not disturbing. Just
painful.
Well, yeah,
some obvious enhancements made right here.
Mm-hmm.
Actually really well done.
Very well done.
Very well done.
You wouldn't know some unless you would have.
Although I think E.T. is one of the things that you're supposed to. One of the subconscious things about E.T. is that he's a botanist. He's supposed to have a sort of kind of a connection with the earth. Mm-hmm. He's always supposed to have sort of a, as Mike describes, he's a little squashy guy. He's kind of got a squashy, muddy feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Connect, and. presence of it, about him. And I've always thought, you know, with the enhancements, he looks like, you know, considerably less moist and not I don't know, as beautiful as the enhancements are. I've always felt he looks a little less authentic. But I mean, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, this scene, the first scene that he says "we"
mm-hmm.
regarding to him and E.T.
Mm-hmm.
We have the music, so they were kind of cueing the impending sickness.
Well, I think it's
there's a nice little moment here where they're reminiscing about going to the ball game with
Dad, who's in Mexico now.
Who's in Mexico with Sal. We'll leave what they're up to your thoughts, but
draw your own conclusions.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is more or less.
And also, it's sort of a scene, if you think about it, of you kind of get the feeling of Keyes, Peter Coyote, relating to Elliot, relating to what he's going through.
Right, and the more,
sense of
his childlikeness. Because
this is the first time you see his face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, or at least part of his face. You see his eyes.
His eyes, which is probably the most important.
Mm-hmm.
It's focused on his eyes, which is very intentional.
Now, I never thought about this until I read an online review of AI.
Oh, yeah, this is that same AI.
This is
the mother reading Pinocchio to the kids in AI is without question an homage to this scene where Mary reading
Peter Pan. And also, the thing I was going to say is, what I never really thought about was reading this section of Peter Pan that you do, where it's like, you know, do you believe in fairies? And, you know, coming back to life gave them an out to do that later in the movie when E.T. is sick.
Oh, I never thought.
I mean, that gave me something to chew over.
That's a good point.
Read that review and, you know, it is a nice...
Or the healing.
Which
Melissa Matheson got that idea, I think, from a lot of kids when she asked she asked a lot of little kids what they think they'd want their best friend from outer space, what powers they want them mm-hmm. to have, and healing was something that came up early on and stayed with the story and obviously became a really iconic part of the story.
I like how you could hear the mom talking throughout the entire scene rather than, mm-hmm. you know, any dialogue between them.
Don't have any dialogue. I mean, you know.
There's actually very little dialogue between E.T. and Elliot, which is...
I guess that's the point.
Again, I mean, in lesser hands, it wouldn't be like this. I mean, this is all Spielberg and Melissa Matheson. I mean, you know, there are very few films that really are... indicative of how talented their filmmaker is,
mm-hmm.
is that this one. I mean, this is one of Spielberg's best films. This is one of the best films of all time. This is, you know, any hyperbole.
See, there you go. You got the Buck Rogers comic strip there again. Explain to the little kids what E.T.'s, you know, a little bit of a callback to when E.T. thinks up the idea to make a radar. And
you see the uranium...
You
of the ticking clock. Like
you establish all that within mm-hmm. within one image.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
opening the umbrella. In the
Wouldn't
you explain that to him? That's not good luck. there's this scene. This is one of the scenes that was changed in the
special edition.
Name of political correctness instead of Mary calling.
Mike, a terrorist,
called him a hippie, even though he still looks like a terrorist.
Right.
Well, no,
he just looks...
A 1982 teenager version of a terrorist.
Well, that's what
actually, he kind of looks like a hobo with a knife in his head.
Well, what I like about that is that's how I used to dress up, you know, the last couple of years. I went trick-or-treating, you know, and I was getting to, like, be 13, 14, 15, and I was still trick-or-treating. I was just throwing stuff together and
not even caring.
You just wanted the candy. That's all you cared about.
Yeah.
Or that would be what, you know, an older brother would look like when he was being forced to take his little brother and sister out trick-or-treating, I think. You know, just throw something together. Yeah. Just to...
Admittedly, I don't mind the change too much. I mean, it, you know, it makes sense. I mean, you know, but this came out post-9/11 and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a very touchy issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't mind this one. The other one, which we'll talk about, and you undoubtedly already know
it's
about,
just downright.
Is downright bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the one place where I think he really mucked up in this special edition.
Again, the most clueless mama. You know, that looks nothing like Gertie. That looks nothing like Gertie underneath that sheet. Probably the biggest laugh, I think, in the whole entire movie is right there.
Yeah.
That's for that person, the biggest laugh.
Well, I don't know. The part where E.T. gets drunk is probably bigger. Sounds nothing
I still
like
laugh at that.
That is one of the funniest things right there.
Yeah.
He looks down, they get that
I know out. The timing is great right there.
Perfect.
This always makes me feel nostalgic about, you remember when your neighborhood actually cared about Halloween?
Yeah.
You know, when it was actually a big deal. You know, now we have apples and or razor blades and apples and stuff like that, and just things that make us totally we're just not able to embrace Halloween like this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I always love that's why I love this scene so much.
Well, there's a great moment in this scene too where coming up,
mm-hmm.
where E.T. sees Yoda.
Yeah. The ultimate Star Wars reference, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Smith would take offense
to
that.
Right. Well, I mean, probably
the greatest non-Kevin Smith Star
Wars
reference.
Oh, yeah, without question.
And the nice little quotation of Yoda's theme, too.
Oh, yeah, no.
Which I never noticed until I think I saw this New Year's Day. And with this, Steven Spielberg inadvertently added to the mythology of Star Wars, because in Episode 1, in the Senate scene, you see a hovercraft
pod of
ETs. ETs.
Right. So I love that shot of them walking underneath the sunset, by the way. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous shot.
And this is before... Well, now you can make that even more spectacular through digital grading.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it looks... And that looks spectacular in its own right. That does. God, I love the look. The size of those trees is just massive.
Nobody films the interior of a forest like Steven Spielberg.
No.
He gives it just a genuine gee whiz quality.
Yeah.
Of, you know, being a little kid in the
forest. It's very ethereal, very mysterious. Now, this scene nailed me when I saw it in the re-release last year. And apparently, funny story, apparently I had to go to the restroom the first time that we were seeing E.T. Now, my mom...
You didn't miss this part
like
in 82,
five,
did you?
I no. think the first time I mean, the we moment. Missed this part, so that when the second time comes up, it took us completely by surprise, whereas everybody else is here waiting for... knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw this scene on the re-release last year, it just... this is one of my favorite moments of all time.
I think this shot
that's
is...
one of the most iconic
that shot's
moments
been,
because of the fact that it was subsequently used for the Amblin logo.
I think that shot's been parodied more times than anything else, I think.
That's one of them.
Flying by
it's
the moon.
At least in the top five.
Yeah. Most parodied movie moment in film history, I think. It's become such a cliche now, but it's still in the original film. It still gets you.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know that buzz I was talking about at the beginning of the movie with that scene. I mean, I got that tenfold with that scene when I saw it last year. I mean, it still gets you. I mean, part of it is the music, part of it is just the wonder of the moment. It's a great scene. This is, you know,
She still has no. She still has no clue what's going on.
Very
she's
irritated,
just,
and you know, you can tell that she's.
She's
very
a good
upset.
Mom. I mean, that's.
She is a good mom. I mean, she's concerned about her kids.
You know, well, it's, I'm not saying. I'm not saying she's a good mom. I think she's a. I think the performance was good.
Yeah.
As you know, she's. You know, but anyway, it's a very realistic mom.
I don't know.
This little contraption here.
That's a good
question.
Well, I mean, we're referring to the filmmaker.
Haven't you been watching the movie?
I believe we're referring to the filmmaker who came
up with it. Oh, well, you know, I bet that's just
remember on Back to the Future where you tried to make a joke about the DeLorean flying?
Well, we'll get back.
We'll get to that. You'll hear that on Back to the Future.
Which,
if you haven't already.
Did you even talk during that commentary?
Every once in a while.
Yeah. But
no, you did.
But, I think the radar, and I think that's all just Melissa Matheson, you know, the whole.
Yeah. Going back to the idea of, you know, how Buck Rogers was the inspiration for that, you know, trying to give the audience, the children of the audience, an idea of how
this
they came across.
This is the most disturbing thought in the whole movie, I think, just the fact that like these guys can just walk
even
into
more disturbing now.
Without question.
It's even more disturbing now.
I mean,
it's
no,
like
no question.
This,
I mean, that's
the idea of this just sends chills down your spine.
I know.
Anyway, talking about Buck Rogers, complete that thought quickly. Part of it, I think, was also in reference to the fact that Steven Spielberg was a huge fan of movie serials and Buck Rogers serials. And I know in an interview, George Lucas acknowledges him as far as the Star Wars trilogy. But anyway,
Escaping of the Neighborhood.
This scene,
it's a bit
apocalyptic, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it wouldn't be
PG
like that,
apocalyptic.
More playing with smoke and lights.
Yeah.
I
mean,
nothing
granted,
really
I'm
interesting
not
about it.
I'm not doubting that this stuff doesn't happen on Halloween.
Yeah, I'm pulling out my shotgun.
It does.
Showing kids what's up.
Well, apparently Spielberg put this in here because he really liked Drew Barrymore in this moment. But I don't know what's.
This is a nice little scene. I mean, it's
I still don't know what's so special about it.
The way she starts talking, you know. I mean, she asks him earlier.
Yeah.
That she says anyway.
Richard Nixon.
Right
see Richard Nixon in the background.
But still, I think if they're going to put this in, I really would have liked to see. Would have liked to have seen the Harrison Ford scene.
I think the reason they put that scene in is to show how the kids got home.
Because
right. They don't know that when in the final movie of the original.
Right, but I mean, still, I would have liked to have seen just something a little bit more interesting than that, but I still love the movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, any complaints we have about the movie, I mean, you know, honestly, I think it's a stretch to say that they don't really matter to us.
They're more or less just forgivable comparison and contrastments to the 82 version, I think. That's all they are. I think
Nobody
it was right
his hands before.
I think it was right about this time, and when I went to see this in 2002, that some idiot's cell phone went off in the theater, and I just wanted to strangle the guy. I mean, people go into theaters now and can't wait until their cell phone goes off, and I just want
to. It was a sad day when they had to put on one of the announcements, "Please turn off all cell phones and pagers
and
in the movie theater."
I'm still waiting for the day for people to actually pay attention to that little. That little piece of advice, strawberry shortcake. I'm still waiting for people to turn off their cell phone and pagers in the movie theater.
Yeah.
If anyone's listening, I'm still waiting for that day to come when people actually acknowledge that.
I'm sure most of the people who are listening to this already do that because they're hardcore movie buffs.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're not, please do that. You can really tell, you know, you can see
there's some more
the effect of this is having on Elliot and more great acting by Henry Thomas.
More computer enhancements here, but still at the same time.
You
very
can't
subtle.
Really even notice. I mean,
unless you've seen the movie as many times as we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look at that's beautiful there. That's absolutely heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. That's downright heartbreaking.
What a good trap.
Mm-hmm. Spielberg is one of those filmmakers where, I mean, he has the capability of just bringing out the best in, you know, not just actors or John Williams or whatever.
Well,
just,
I mean,
any
his report,
any crew member
his
who works
with
on his films.
Spielberg's
I mean,
rapport with child actors is mm-hmm. extraordinary.
I mean, not just with actors. I mean, with crew. I mean, you mentioned the shot right there. I mean, it's a great shot. I mean, there are loads of great shots in this movie. I mean, you know, the fact that he's able, he's one of those, I mean, he's one of those filmmakers that people, I'm sure, would love to work with,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, I think I think it was, again, in his interview with James Lipton on Inside the Actor's Studio, he was talking about his rapport with child actors and the fact that he doesn't treat them like kids. He treats them
mm-hmm.
like, you know, adults or people that, you know, he treats them like professionals.
Yeah.
Just, and that's, I think that's where a lot of the performance comes from. He treats them like they're, you know, like they're on the exact same level as he is. And,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, you can really tell that in AI with mm-hmm. Haley Joel Osment's performance, too.
Mm-hmm. He still has it, but, you know.
And with, I think Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember that scene.
Kids and Hook were really good.
Mm-hmm.
That was like
and in Jurassic Park.
And Jurassic
the
Park.
First one.
Jurassic
yeah.
Park.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, that was great.
I mean, we're just going we're running through the entire filmography, but Short Round and Temple of Doom and all that stuff. I mean,
yeah.
We could list all of them. But
yeah, but I mean, he gets, I mean.
I like how you don't see the police officer.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, they'd be sitting down. She'd be sitting down. Sitting down next
to Sally.
Yeah.
No, but it's more or less the filming technique of filming most of the adults anyway, from the waist
mm-hmm.
up or, you know, from not from. You know, that's how a little kid would look at this situation, I think.
That, I mean, that's. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to take you in for child abuse.
Well, it was performance right here.
Yeah. Mhm.
Again, we're just watching the movie right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered with all these Viking scenes, do they get like Viking professionals to do it, or were they?
I don't know. I mean, I would think they will.
To get the kids.
Well, you just think about
how
many.
Some of it was stunt.
Think about
people.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, you know, some of the more complex stuff at the end of the movie.
Think about how many kids.
I mean, I'm sure that was one of the requirements for the people they did get to play the kids. That's like, well, you gotta be able to bike pretty well. I mean,
well, think about all the kids that tried all these stunts on their bikes after they saw this movie.
Oh, they probably did. Yeah.
Think of all the broken necks, but.
Sounds like this move right here.
Yeah,
this is.
That ain't easy.
No, it's.
And that's probably a double, too. No, it isn't easy.
But yeah, more embellishing the bike theme,
mm-hmm.
which I love. This is a vintage Spielberg moment right here where he lifts up the sheet. And
yeah.
I love that moment. And it's all done with as little dialogue as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just tells it, just more all really wonderful storytelling images
and music.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when Spielberg calls John Williams the greatest musical storyteller of all time, I mean, he isn't kidding.
Mm-hmm.
He is not kidding. And
most heartbreaking,
the least
image,
I mean,
right here.
I was scared.
Because
then you
I was
see
just
the
heartbroken.
And you see the raccoons, like, get away from them. Once again, going back to that bathroom scene, it's like you do sort of get the idea that it's like water is an important part of keeping him alive.
I think that got left out in the original cut, though.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's sort of like the running at the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things, one of those nice little enhancements that gives you something else to think about when it comes to the movie.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you never really thought about that, you know, the original movie.
I think this is where what is his last name?
Robert McNaughton.
Robert McNaughton. I think this is when his performance really kicks into high gear because, you know, E.T. or Elliot.
Yeah.
I keep saying, but Elliot really does take his health, you know, and I think Elliot takes a back seat to Robert McNaughton's performance here. How he. I don't know. He just.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly did an article on the 20th anniversary of E.T. and talked to, you know, the actors and Steven and some of the crew members, and it's like, you know, I think when they talked about Robert McNaughton, what he'd been doing, I think he said something like, it's like, you know, it's not that he didn't get scripts after this, because he did, but it's like, he just never got anything that he liked as much as this.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's like, I can see that. I mean, this is one of those movies that you can really see spoiling an actor,
mm-hmm.
you know, to sort of like...
I was an E.T., I don't need to...
I was an E.T. I mean, this just isn't, you know, it's not necessarily an ego thing, it's just being proud of something,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I mean... You can tell he's proud of it. I mean, all of these, you know, there's no reason.
Whereas how Drew Barrymore
be.
Just took her commercialism appeal and just ran into the ground, I guess.
She's done some movies that I think have been worth mentioning.
Yeah, but
I think she's trying to be a little more ambitious.
But something just tells me she is one of those spoiled brats who says, well, I was an E.T., so there you go.
No.
I think you have a chip on your shoulder.
I think you do, because of the fact that...
Well, probably
no offense, it's no offense, but I mean, I do think that's...
This scene is probably the scariest moment in the whole movie, I think.
And
for
like
kids, anyway.
Her saying, this is my home.
Exactly, but that was probably a moment that made a lot of people jump. I think
sure,
especially,
this...
Yeah, this is...
was paid homage to the right stuff, wasn't it? Subsequently, Armageddon and Monsters, Inc. Another, again, great lighting, use of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg, one of the great visual filmmakers of our time.
Really likes smoke.
Really likes smoke backlighting.
And I still don't see how that smoke could have been coming from that cup of coffee, but we passed that by now. So.
Yeah, wow.
Was it incense?
Yeah, it's a pot of something else.
Well, you know, I thought one of the kids was smoking. But not, you know,
Spielberg, not like you, hey.
Yeah. By the way, that reminds me, I need to get some cigarettes, because, you know, I smoke. Not really.
I was going to say, no.
I don't smoke.
Now, I mean, this is like...
This is such a change in
yeah, I mean, the tone just shifts when
it
gets to the point
music.
Where it's like Elliot and E.T. are separated. I mean, you know, from there on, it's just not the same type of movie. I mean, this is where it really gets dark.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Well, what I like about this sequence is setting up the fact that you're finally going to see the character of Keyes from the waist up. And,
yeah.
You know,
right.
if they hadn't set it up the way they do,
mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have known who Peter Coyote is when he's finally revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his performance, I mean, it's one of those performances where it's like... It really is unheralded. His performance is unheralded. It's very good. It's very human. It's a very humane performance.
Well, he does.
Of a character that could have been.
He does.
Just, I mean, you don't. You feel sympathy for him, which is the last thing you expect through most of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
he does the.
Really a credit to him as an actor.
He does the 10-year-old inside a 40-year-old's body thing
mm-hmm.
very well. Yeah, this is where Robert McNaughton's performance really kicks in, and he really becomes a real intricate. I mean, he's always been he's he's an intricate part of the story throughout the whole movie, but right here, he's really, this is where Henry Thomas's performance takes a backseat to.
Yeah.
You know,
he really takes
this sequence in the movie and runs with it. And he's the main kid right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one we're rooting for.
Now, a lot of these doctors are Steven Spielberg's internists, actually. his own doctors he got to play in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wanted the medical dialogue to be as
authentic as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty authentic.
Yeah.
A little bit of biology that I take.
12 years later, he's producing ER.
But
and the look on ET just.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the animatronic right there. That's not the.
Yeah, I mean they're.
there's very little use of computer enhancement throughout this sequence.
For which I'm profoundly grateful because of the fact that, I mean, the look of him is just heartbreaking. I mean...
This is a brilliant shot right here of E.T.'s, or Elliot's reflection in Peter Coyote's medical mask. That's just vintage. Vintage Spielberg image right there.
I mean... Again, credit to Peter Coyote. I mean,
and
he takes a character that, I mean, it's one of the great character surprises in that it's like, you know, the movie sets you up to think that this guy's going to be a bad guy.
Right.
This guy's going to be a guy you're going to be hissing at. Mm-hmm. I mean,
but you
totally
get feel
a complete 180, and, I mean, you really are.
You start to root for
have
him.
Have some sympathy for him, and because of the fact
like
that he connects
Elliot.
With Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's really remarkable about this is because of the fact that the way the movie ends, I mean, you know, we could talk about this later when we actually get to the ending, but it's like, the way the movie ends, you know, the fact that throughout the entire movie, you're trying to sell, you know, you're looking for E.T. and Elliot to separate, you know that's the ultimate purpose to, you know, it's going to break them apart if he does get home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... In any other movie, that would be the last thing you would want. I mean, in Lilo and Stitch, which is a movie that is very similar to E.T. on more than a few levels, it's very similar type of story. Well, it's a type of different type of story, same type of story.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a very different thing where you want them to be together. But here, it's like you almost, because of the fact that what E.T. is supposed to, you know, what E.T.'s goal is, which is to go home. I mean, you know, in any other movie, it'd be the last thing you'd want, whereas in here, it's a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the most surprising things about this movie. I mean...
You're not disappointed.
You're not disappointed when that happens at the end. I mean, because of the fact that...
Is that the animatronic right there?
I think so.
The mouth articulating the words.
Yeah, the sort of pivotal connection moment between the two as they're breaking apart.
Why do I like this scene? Is because you hear someone say off camera, "The boy's coming back. We're losing E.T."
Yeah.
That's a great line for little kids to understand what's going on.
And
that's why I. Right there, that's perfect for little kids to be able to understand exactly what's going on.
And it's it's really one of the things that gets you.
This is another wonderful moment here.
Yeah, I mean, we cannot stress enough that there are, like, at least a dozen or so just great moments in this movie. I mean, this is another one.
The very no dialogue, just all the score and the performance by Robert McNaughton. Just he can't do anything to help his brother, and you can feel his pain. I hate to use that cliche, but you can feel exactly what he's feeling because of the music and the score.
Thing is, it's like here, where it in even though he hasn't had as much of a personal connection to E.T. as Elliot has, I mean, you really feel like he doesn't want E.T. to die.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he doesn't know that there's, that Elliot's coming back. So it's like it sort of implies that, he thinks that means they're going to be losing both, but...
Another interesting... is the fact that this movie was shot entirely in sequence.
Yeah.
So
you could go through this.
It was more or less for the kids, so they knew where they were the day before, and they had no idea what was coming next, and by now supposedly the kids have a real connection with this with the animatronic. Character that he's become a real you've been there, they've been there with the character the entire time, and I don't think you see too many scenes like this in a family movie.
No, I mean, this, you know, you would never have one of the main characters die in a family film.
You would never have...
or at least the possibility of them dying. I mean, this was just way too risky.
Just the fact that...
And using the paddles. I mean, this is the first time I ever remember, seeing these in a movie. I mean, it just...
Well, Drew Barrymore's performance right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
absolutely...
Even more.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. Because that was a little kid's reaction somewhere in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Her face here is just heartbreaking. Mike trying to be the stronger, older brother. Mm-hmm. But, he's... Love the French horn right here. Just totally fits the moment that you're, and the feelings you're supposed to be experiencing.
Yeah. This was, John Williams obviously won an Academy Award for this. This was his fourth Oscar he had won.
Mm-hmm.
He's won five overall. Well deserved. This is one of his best scores. I think it's
arguably
second. Yeah. Arguably his best. I personally prefer Empire Strikes Back over this, but and it's one of the 10 best scores I've ever heard. I mean, it's one of those things that it's I mean, one could debate, whether goes a bit too much for the sentimental in some of his scores, but
well, the thing there's so many
he makes it work.
There's so many movies where the sentimentality just feels forced on you.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many movies where it just feels like people are the characters are winking back at the camera saying you're supposed to feel sorry for them. You're supposed to feel you're supposed to feel this emotion. You have to feel this emotion or the movie's not going to work for you.
Yeah.
And the sentimentality is not forced upon us in this movie, in this film. It's all very real, and you're
and again, it's testament to Spielberg. Although, he has actually gotten more sentimental over the years as a filmmaker.
Right.
But he's never lost the ability to make it palpable and real, and not feel forced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't remember what I felt when I saw this, when you see this scene of just E.T. dead,
mm-hmm.
where You just seem...
Well, without question, I'm sure the entire theater is silent.
It shell shocks me now. I mean, because it's like... Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen enough of family films and I was like, you know, nobody would go this far.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would go this far. I mean, this is a very dark story in this last half of it. And, it holds up exceptionally well. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the cliche is they don't make them like they used to. Guess what? When it comes to family films, they don't make them like this anymore.
No.
I mean, this is very much, you know, it's not an insult to call this the Wizard of Oz of our time. As far as family entertainment goes, it really is.
Mm-hmm.